Blog Talk Radio.
I hate you both. I've hated you ever since I can remember. I hate you, and I wish you both had cancer.
Cancer?
Yes, in the head.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Tell me, you built a time machine out of a DeLorean?
People seem to like me because I am polite and I'm rarely late.
And now the host of the Stupid Cancer Show, Matthew Zachary.
Monday, June 8th. And we are once again live on the Stupid Cancer Show, the voice of young adults with cancer. We are your friendly neighborhood weekly social webcast, finally giving that voice to nearly 5 million young adults affected by cancer. This broadcast is a program of the I'm Too Young for This Cancer Foundation, a national leader in the fight against cancer, working exclusively on behalf of survivors and their care providers under the age of 40. Got cancer under 40? Sucks, huh? Well, get busy living because the Stupid Cancer Show is on the air. Welcome to tonight's broadcast, my friends. We are here to change the world one chemo infusion at a time and share all of our collective crackness. Now, call me a hippie, but do not call me a victim because I don't believe that change is possible if you never disrupt and challenge the status quo. I am still here. You are still here. This is why we fight. Forget the cure, folks. That's right. You heard it here first. Forget the cure. Survivorship is all that matters. So welcome, my friends, to the Stupid Cancer Movement, because we're here to stay in the couch. It's comfy. You see, here in Stupid Cancer Land, we're not just about the quantity of your life. We're also about the quality, too. Why? Because there's more to the cure than just research. The need to cure cancer for Gen X and Gen Y, whatever that means, is only going to come from within our own ranks. Are we on our own? Well, as I always say, that if we're the generation that invented Google and Facebook, Second Life, we kept Sanjaya on American Idol all those weeks, we should be able to take care of our own. This is Generation Cancer, and it is our fight. We have the sheer numbers and the voting power and the influence to change the rules. Because remission is not an excuse for a cure. And survivorship is all that matters. Alrighty, last week's show, our thyroid cancer special, hugely successful, with Lily Mulcahy in the spotlight, Alicia Fox Felicio from the Light of Life Foundation, Amy White from I2Y Texas, thyroid cancer survivor, and Gary Bloom from the Thyroid Cancer Survivors Association, a very engaging, lengthy, almost an hour and a half long broadcast last week. And tonight, Sex, and more sex with Survivor Spotlight Jason Zimmerman, young adult survivor of both neuroblastoma and thyroid cancer, and our sexcapade with Dr. Sue Ann Mark and Sage Bolte from creator of STEP Sexual Transformation and Empowerment Programs for Survivors. That's Sue Ann Mark. And Sage is the oncology counselor sexpert at Life with Cancer Family Center in Nova Fairfax. So again, hello, my friends, and welcome to yet another fun, filled, and exciting run through the hand on tonight's Stupid Cancer Show, and a Stupid Cancer welcome to all of our first-time listeners here on the Blog Talk Radio Network, coming at you live from the Chemo Deck, our fabulous studio in downtown Manhattan. I'm your host, Matthew Zachary, 13-year young adult, pediatric brain cancer survivor. Joining me, as always, in the studio tonight, our chief cancer anarchist, Jack Bouffard. Hello, Jack.
It's the sex show. Woo!
That's all we have to hear for Jack.
Hi, Matt.
I think you just destroyed a bunch of amplifiers and speakers and whatnot. It's a bunch of people.
Dude, I've been waiting all week for this. Ever since the week started yesterday.
That's quite a while. Anyway, Jack will be monitoring our live concurrent chat room. So if you have something to say, well, I might ignore you. He won't. And I'm not going to go to the rest of Bart because we've been saying that for almost 6 months now. And I think you've earned the respect for me to slightly barrage you with a little more respect.
Thank you, sir.
Okay.
I appreciate it.
I will edit the copy retroactively. But as always, it is my esteemed pleasure to welcome our official partner in crime here on the Stupid Cancer Show, hailing from the Windy City of Chicago, fellow young adult survivor and author of the acclaimed book, which everyone needs to go out and get, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, the lovely, talented, blogtastic, and spectacular Carol Rosenthal.
Hello, Matthew.
Hello, my dear. How are you?
Hi, Carol.
Hi, Jack. I'm doing really good. How are you guys doing tonight?
We know that you're quite stoked about tonight's show.
Indeed, I am. What do I have to say? Sex is my favorite subject. I talk about it all the time. I love writing about it in my book. I've been gearing up for this, and there have been a lot of people on my blog who have been commenting, too, so I know I'm not the only one who's terribly excited.
Yeah, it really is this elephant in the room that other, I don't know, do you think it's generational? I mean, I'm excited about hearing what you guys talk about tonight.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if it's generational or not. I think that part of it has to deal with the fact that, you know, in the cancer community, I think we focus so much on quantity of life that we don't deal with this very taboo issue that relates to our quality of life, and that it's something that doctors aren't comfortable about talking about, patients aren't necessarily comfortable about talking about, and, yeah, I mean, look, people don't talk about sex out loud even when it isn't dealing with cancer. It's just a taboo subject in our culture, so combine that with cancer, and you've got a lot of people shutting up. So I think a lot of people want to talk about it, and I think it's great that we're doing this show tonight.
And I'm very excited, too, because we have, once again, one of the benefits of doing the show live from an actual studio is we have a live studio audience tonight. So I'd like to welcome some returning champions, Brooke Ballantyne.
Hey, Matthew.
Hello, Brooke.
Hi, Brooke.
Do you know Jack, by the way? Have you met?
Welcome to the sex show.
And
I'll be your host.
Oh, God. And, of course, Lisa Wolf is in the club here tonight.
Hey, now.
All righty. And joining us from cancerdirectory.com, Lori Robinson. Hello, Lori.
Hey, guys.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Very cool. Very cool. Love to have a live studio audience. Nothing like it. So so I guess the hot topic for us tonight before we get to the news is the OMG Summit in Syracuse, which I hope we have some new listeners tonight who attended the event that are chiming in. Really a magnificent event, exceeding all expectations. I know Lee is in the chat room. She's been talking it up the whole time since she got drunk three nights in a row. And
what? My Leah got drunk three nights in a row?
Impossible.
Are you sure
enough.
It wasn't got drunk on three drinks in a row?
Oh, well, maybe. But, yeah, Carol, we missed you there. We want to have you. I'm going to push as hard as I can to have you as the keynote for next year. I make no promises, but since I am on the committee and I'm in charge of everything, I'm pretty sure I can probably make that happen, but I think you would lend so much to that audience.
You're the king of cancer.
Yes.
Right, the king of cancer. So tell me a little bit about Erin. She was the keynote this year, and what was she talking about?
Erin Zamet Ruddy, our good friend, who is a survivor of chronic myelogenous leukemia, who is an example, at least in my mind, of the future of young adult cancer survivorship, because she takes a magic pill called Gleevec, and I am very careful to talk about magic pills when we talk about cure. But honestly, in all due respect, it is a magic pill, and it keeps her leukemia in check. Basically, she didn't have to go through radiation. She didn't lose any hair, no chemo. She takes the pill, and she doesn't die. And it's just an extraordinary example of the progress we can make with molecular medicine and targeted therapy. She talked a lot about how she has been able to use her survivorship in a meaningful way through her column, which turned into her blog, which turned into her book, which turned into her blog, and that social media is really the platform that she's used to help other people connect with each other through her sort of creative endeavors through her writing and her observations. And everyone loved her story. She's very humble. And I think I could spill the beans at this point because she did so there. There was a whole big hoopla about when she went off Gleevec to have a baby, which was very controversial. But she was fine. She had the baby. The baby's beautiful now. Alex is I think, almost 2 years old now. And she's pregnant again. So it's really quite an astonishing example of someone who is not allowing cancer to define them, but they are clearly defining their life around their circumstances.
I think pretty amazing.
Yeah. She's quite wonderful. She's very articulate. And much to the chagrin of many, many hundreds of people, she is no longer going to be blogging for Glamour. She closed down her blog this week, and she just wants to have a life again. Like, I think we can respect that.
You know, I think it's actually a really important thing to talk about is that this community is an amazing place to be, and sometimes it's also really important to take a vacation from it too. That I think as we all identify as cancer patients or cancer survivors, you know, to everything a season, and sometimes it can be really useful to take a break and remind ourselves of the big, large, lovely world out there that doesn't necessarily relate to cancer. And so I really applaud her for making that move, and you know, I think it's smart, and I think that she's sort of a role model in that way. And you know, I think we all forge our identities as cancer crosses our paths, and it's okay to move on and forge an identity that doesn't focus as much on that too.
I mean, she's already sitting on like the board of directors of Leukemia and Lymphoma Society and the not TJ Martel. What's that? I forget that organization, whatever it's called.
That one.
Denise Rich founded it for her daughter who passed away. They do a lot of, they do these huge black tie multi-crazy celebrity things, and she's on their board too. She's still going to be very active. She's just not going to be blogging anymore. But I think that she, again, it's kind of like very Chris Carr-ish in the sense that, you know, Chris didn't go through, you know, radiation or surgery or chemotherapy, but she made a choice to do what she felt she could have control over and make that her message, you know, to the cancerverse. Cricket?
The cancerverse.
I thought we were talking about sex tonight. I'm just waiting.
Yeah. Sex, sex, and more sex.
Well, all right. Well, with respect, speaking of sex, let's let Jack read the news.
Yeah, because that's what I think of when I read the news.
Clearly. All right, so let's cue it over to Jack. Ready? Where's the news button? Here we go.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Cancer.
Just the facts, ma'am.
Okay, during this part of the Stupid Cancer Show, we announce worthy news stories to our adoring listeners to inform them about the latest and greatest in young adult programs, services, events, projects, and other stuff. If you have an upcoming program event or press release that you would like to hear broadcast during this part of the segment, please fax it to us at 646-861-2565 or email Jack Buffard at jack@i2y.com. That's jack@i2y.com. Take it away, pal.
Good evening, everybody. Here is your Stupid Cancer News. Matthew, I don't know what you're doing Wednesday night, but I will be at the OMG, we just had that, at the Stupid Cancer Ungala here in downtown Manhattan, Wednesday night, June 18th, from 7 to 10. Join the I2Y New York chapter as we have Cancer Teenies, spectacular raffle prizes, awesome times for survivors. Survivors are free, open bar for $65. You can't beat it. You can check out the Ungala website at ungala.i2y.com.
That's correct.
June 18th. Washington, D.C., for one night only, Jonna's Body, Please Hold, a cancerous dark comedy starring the amazing Jonna Tomasis. Jonna is a three-time cancer survivor who turned her experience into a funny, uplifting performance you must see. This event is free to all young adult cancer survivors, and to RSVP for Jonna's Body, Please Hold, please contact Kelly Alfaro at kelly.alfaro, kelly.alfaro@lls.org, or you can call Kelly at 703-399-2936. Matthew, you and I are attending this event, and I spoke to Kelly the other day, and the reservations are flying in, so...
Are they really?
Yeah, it's going to be an awesome event.
Fabulous.
So, again, Kelly Alfaro, kelly.alfaro@lls.org. Let's see, what do we have next? We have Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to
Never
Cancer.
Heard of it.
I read it. It's a great book. Would you like me to tell you about it? Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s is the newly released book written by our very own Stupid Cancer co-host, Carol Rosenthal. Everything Changes, dust the sugar coating off of the young adult cancer experience. It is packed with gripping stories and unprecedented collection of young adult cancer resources. Everything Changes is available wherever books are sold. Visit the website everythingchangesbook.com. Next up, we have 70k.org. That's the word 70, the letter K.org. There are approximately 70,000 people aged 15 to 39 diagnosed with cancer every year. For over two decades, there has been little or no improvement in survival for this age group. By signing this bill, you are supporting the Adolescent and Young Adult Cancer Bill of Rights to be established as a standard for care to meet the needs of this underserved population. Cancer Care Programs. The young adult groups that are active and running at Cancer Care are as follows. Living with Cancer, Inactive Treatment. Life After Cancer, Post-Treatment. Young Adults, Loss of a Parent. Young Women with Breast Cancer. Young Adult Individual Grief Counseling. Young Adult Caregiver, All Diagnoses and Relationships. Contact I2Y friend Julie Larson at jlarson@cancercare.org. That's jlarson@cancercare.org. Or you can reach Julie by phone at area code 212-712-6173. First Descent 2009 program schedule is as follows. June 26th through July 2nd in White Lake, Wisconsin. July 5th through the 11th, July 12th through the 18th, and July 19th through the 25th at Glacier National Park, Montana. July 17th through July 23rd, White Salmon, Washington. I will be there. So who wants to come out and do some whitewater rafting with Jack Bouffard? Crickets. July 24th through the 30th. July 31st through August 6th. In Vail, Colorado. First Descent, Garden City, Idaho, August 14th through August 20th. And finally, August 30th through September 4th in Jackson, Wyoming. That's a climbing and mountaineering First Descent. So head on over to firstdescent.org. Can't Make a Dream is hosting their Young Adult Conference from June 18th through the 25th. Their Teen Camp from July 1st through the 8th. Their Kids Camp from July 12th through the 19th. Their Siblings Camp July 23rd through the 30th, and in August is their Heads Up Conference for survivors aged 18 to 25.
Is this First Descent?
This is Can't Make a Dream.
Because I wanted to go back to First Descent.
Okay.
They have a special announcement for everyone tonight. They are currently underbooked for their event coming up on the one coming up right now.
June 26th through July 2nd in White Lake, Wisconsin.
Sorry, Carol, what's that?
Yep, the one in Wisconsin, what Jackson said.
They are under-registered, so we are encouraging everyone to go to the First
Descent.
It's free. Yeah, it's free, of course, but and they have travel scholarships for first-time registrants, so it's free to get there, too.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a whole bunch of stuff going on Facebook regarding that. So June 26th through July 2nd, White Lake, Wisconsin. Going back to Can't Make a Dream, you can find all the information about all the camps that Can't Make a Dream has to offer at www.campdream.org. CancerDirectory.com is a brand new resource to help you deal with your cancer crapness. It's called CancerDirectory.com. Not the sassiest of domain names, but I'm telling you, it's the one you need to remember. Whether you are already a blogger or have been considering becoming one, this could be your chance to share your rage against the machine with scores of others out there dealing with
the
same BS issue.
Hang on. Give me that.
Why?
I'm going to teach you how to read this.
What do you mean?
This is how this is supposed to be read.
Take it away, Matthew.
All right, folks. Tonight we're going to introduce you to a brand new resource.
I introduced it 3 weeks ago.
Tonight I'm going to remind you about a brand new resource that Jack introduced you to 3 weeks ago. To help you deal with your cancer crapness. It's called CancerDirectory.com. Not the sassiest of domain names, but I'm telling you it's one you need to remember. Whether you're already a blogger or have been considering becoming one, this could be your chance to share your rage against the machine with scores of others out there dealing with the same BS as you. So log on to cancerdirectory.com and post or repost your blog today, tomorrow, or whenever your chemo-induced hysteria settles down. I'm Billy Mays, and I approve this message.
Thank you. Anybody need a weed auger while we're at it? And finally, the Cancer Hope Network. Here's another resource you might be interested in. The Cancer Hope Network provides free and confidential one-on-one support to cancer patients and their families by matching cancer patients and or family members with trained volunteers who have themselves undergone and recovered from a similar cancer experience. How you like me now, Matt? Well, they're looking for new support volunteers who have had any of the following cancers: lung, liver, pancreatic, stomach, appendix, sarcoma, anal, vulvar, bladder, kidney, primary, parietal, and only one Merkel cell or T-cell lymphoma. If you are interested in being trained, email info@cancerhopenetwork.com. And that, my friends, is the Stupid Cancer News.
Alrighty.
Back to you, Mr. Know-It-All.
Mr. Know-It-All, you're reading it like you're some sort of robot, dude. You got to throw some spice into the mix.
I'm nervous about tonight's show. I'm sweating.
It's all about the sex for you. All right. Well, speaking of sex, let's bring out our Survivor Spotlight tonight.
What time is it?
Alrighty. In our spotlight tonight, Jason Zimmerman is a 33-year-old, three-time cancer survivor. I mean, three times a charm, maybe. Diagnosed with neuroblastoma at 6 months, thyroid cancer at age 15, and a recurrence of thyroid cancer at age 21. He's a young adult and long-term survivorship advocate, and this is a board member of three cancer nonprofits. He's a board member. We know what that means. The wellness community of Silicon Valley, providing free support to cancer patients, a single light online cancer resource database, and Yoga Bear, which matches up cancer survivors with free yoga. Also actively seeking a job in the... Dude, it's Monster Chemo or something like that. Please welcome to the...
Do you want me to read it?
Oh,
I bet you I could read it better.
I don't think you could possibly do it any better than I do it. Jason Zimmerman.
What's up, everybody? Thanks for having me.
Hey, Jason.
I'm pretty flattered to be on the sexy show, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, you know, when we booked you before we made it the sex show, but then we made it the sex show because you were already booked.
Well, thank you very much. I feel honored. Thank you.
So, you know, it's funny. I'm a huge fan of the wellness community. I love Haley. She's like the greatest thing ever.
Yeah.
From Yoga Bear, Haley Tekka, who's been on our show, by the way, yogabear.com.
She's great.
Yep.
And actually, we just got an email today from a single light. Jack, do you remember the name of that guy you wrote back to?
Nathaniel Montgomery.
Yeah, Montgomery.
Yeah. Nathaniel.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's kind of ironic there. We got that. He was emailing us, and we're going to send him all of our updated info. I think it's a great program.
Yeah, it is. It's great. It's really blowing up, too. We're kind of really adding to the database, too, so there's a lot of good resources there.
So are you on some sort of inverse proportional challenge of, like, the more cancer boards you join, the less likely you're to have cancer again?
I don't know. That'd be pretty cool. I just can't say no to anybody with a great cause, you know, so.
Oh, good. That's good to know.
Well, there you go.
Yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, really.
So, I mean, we did our thyroid cancer special last week, and you had it twice.
I did, yeah. It was a great show last week. It was very informative for all of us the thyroid cancer survivors. It was great, and I'm glad you let it run long because, you know, there's a lot of great information out there.
And Carol, Gary told you some information after the fact. You had some questions that were answered by Gary that were asked. We left dangling at the end of the show, right?
Oh, absolutely. And if I had three brain cells at the moment, I could remember what they are.
No.
I think one of the questions was, if you have cancer in another part of your body, can it metastasize to your thyroid? And the answer to that was, yes, indeed it can. Great. Yeah, it can. And he gave us a whole long list of, certain types of cancer that can metastasize the thyroid, but I don't have that handy in front of me, so I won't read it and scare the crap out of all of you with those kinds of diseases wondering whether or not you're going to become one of us.
No, but Jason, one of the Carol and Jason, one of the questions we asked last week is, you know, the ignorance of, well, if you had thyroid cancer and they removed your thyroid, how could you get thyroid cancer again? And you did.
Yeah. Well, it was, from what was described to me, they gave me the sort of a lower dose of the I-131 the first time, kind of to clear away the brush was the analogy that they used, and then see what's left. So a few years later, I had another thyroid scan, and there were some residual cells left over. So I guess they were kind of the tougher ones that didn't get killed by the first round of I-131. And so later on, the second time is when I had a higher dose of the radioactive iodine to kind of get rid of everything.
Well, think about it. You can have breast cancer and have a mastectomy, and your breast cancer can still recur. And
exactly.
Your lymph nodes are locally, and with thyroid cancer, it's, you know, often microscopic cells that really didn't get out of there the first time. So in some ways, you know, I hesitate for myself personally to use the word recurrence because likely it never went away. And
true.
There was just some that was hanging out in there and
yeah.
and grew large enough so that it could be detected and then
yeah.
responded to.
The doctors just need some kind of a description for that.
They do.
So that's where recurrence came in.
So when you had neuroblastoma at 6 months old, that's surgery, isn't it?
Yeah, I had it was on the left side of my neck, and so that was removed, and I had radiation, mantle radiation, so above the neck, in that area. And the prevailing theory is that the radiation from the neuroblastoma caused the thyroid cancer when I was 15. So.
That's like the best birthday present ever.
One of those late side effects like you're always talking about.
The gift that keeps on giving, as
exactly.
we like to say.
Talk a little bit. I mean, I loved that moment to plug yourself for work. You know, I think this was like cancermonster.com. Tell us about what you do in your life now and what kind of work are you looking for?
Well, I work in a lab now. I'm a molecular biologist, and I've been doing all this work, like Matthew mentioned, with these nonprofits, and I think it would be awesome to just get into that full time. So that's sort of what I'm looking for, I guess, if anybody out there in Radioland is listening.
Fantastic. Talk a little bit about, so you're working in molecular biology. I mean, do you attribute that to being a cancer patient? Or
I think definitely.
Uh-huh.
Definitely. I was interested in science from a young age, and that definitely had to do with going to the doctor and finding out all the stuff about what I had and how I was sick and all that stuff. And then when I had the thyroid cancer at 15 was kind of really when it solidified the interest in science. I read my science book right after the diagnosis to kind of figure out what was going on and what the thyroid really did and stuff. And then that's kind of the path that I went down.
You know, that's fantastic that you have found, you know, a way to incorporate something that has made a huge impact on your life and into your career. And I think it's great to hear about that because I get so many emails from people who are saying, I want to make a difference, and what do I do? And they often think, like, you have to start a nonprofit organization.
Yeah,
and there are
no.
way, way, way many other things that you can do
exactly.
in the world with your mind and your skills and your talents that will serve this community. And
right.
it sounds like you're doing some great work and looking for some great work.
Yeah, I just kind of stumbled on some great people that really have led me in the right direction, and sort of, you know, the more people I meet, then the wider the network spreads, and the more I get involved in. So the more I want to do, also.
Great.
So Jay, like, without putting you completely on the spot, and you know, your degree of comfort notwithstanding, has sex been an issue for you as a cancer, as a three-time survivor?
Not really. When I was 15, the first time that wasn't even on the plate for me. So.
You didn't, like, have to stop pimping yourself out on the streets or whatever.
Not at all.
You were 15 and had thyroid cancer.
No.
You're like, oh, my career's over.
Over before it started.
Yeah.
So, the one thing that comes up on the show a lot is fertility issues, you know, like, should I have banked my sperm or whatever. But that never came up for me either time, 15 or 21. So I think that's kind of part of the thing that you guys do and Fertile Hope and other organizations like that that spread the word about that just to get people involved in that decision-making process. And
so when you say it never came up for you, you mean that your doctors never discussed it with you?
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
And I never thought of that. I mean, yeah.
And, you know, Fertile Hope has a really great feature on their website. Everybody who's interested and curious should go to, I think it's fertilehope.org, and they have a fertility risk calculator, and it was pretty cool. I went on and I sort of typed in all my parameters for thyroid cancer, and it helps tell you how much at risk you are for infertility issues. And,
is that Casio or Texas Instruments?
I think it's a slide ruler.
Okay.
As
yeah.
opposed to the Apple computers behind you.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right. Well, I mean, Jay, I know it's been a long time coming. We owed you the slot because you're just a great guy. And I met you like over like a year and a half ago. You're one of the original, you know, San Francisco groupies working with Ellen and Natalie out there. I'm hoping to come out there again sometime this summer. I have some business to do with Google. Would love to see you.
Well, let me get a plug in. If you're out June 27th, that's when Yoga Palooza is. Yoga Bear's putting on the second annual Yoga Palooza. It's an afternoon of yoga and celebrating health and survivorship. And you can check that out at yogabear.org.
Excellent. Excellent, excellent.
Awesome.
Well, thanks so much for being on the show, and we'll have you back and embarrass you more next time.
Awesome. I can't wait for the rest of the sexy show. Enjoy yourself.
All right, Jay. Take care.
Good night,
Boya.
All right.
Thanks.
Jason Zimmerman, everybody.
Did he admit to being a cancer PIMP?
I think he did.
I think he did.
Possibly.
Email me, Jason. I need some tips.
All right, people. You know what's coming now. The moment you have all been waiting for.
Where's my...
We're going to bring in our two guests simultaneously. So allow me to introduce them. Dr. Sue Ann Mark is a young adult survivor of breast cancer and a clinical sexologist in private practice in San Francisco. She's a board certified by the American College of Sexologists and lectures regularly from the UCSF Cancer Survivorship Program. She is the creator of STEPS, Sexual Transformation and Empowerment Program for Survivors. Sue Ann will be joined by Sage Bolte, an oncology counselor with Life with Cancer, a nonprofit program in Northern Virginia. She provides individuals and family counseling and facilitates cancer support groups. She presents at local, regional, and national conferences to survivors and healthcare professionals on the impact of cancer on the sexual self. She's got a crazy-ass great survey going out there. We'll send you the links, and we'll talk about that later. She's finishing up her PhD, where her research will explore the impact of cancer and its treatments on the young adult's sexual self as compared to their healthy peers. Please welcome to our crazy sex show, Sue Ann Mark and Sage Bolte.
Welcome, welcome.
Hey, guys.
Hello, hello.
All righty. All right, who's going to say dildo first?
Sage. Dildo.
I'll do it. I think you just
dildo.
Said it first.
All right, Carol. You're on, Carol.
All right. Excellent. I'm so glad you guys are here. And Sue Ann, you're hailing from my alma mater, UCSF, which is where, you know, I've been many times for my cancer treatment. And it's great that you're working out of there. Fantastic survivor support center. I want to ask both of you guys first. If you can just tell us, you know, sexologist, right? What does that term mean? Sex therapist? What does a sex therapist do? You know, these are words that we hear, but kind of conjure up very interesting images in various people's minds. Demystify it for us. What do you do? What's your profession all about? If somebody goes to see a sexologist or a sex therapist, what does a session look like?
I love this question. When you come to see me, typically what I tell people to do is go home and masturbate.
Bye.
And who is this? Say your
Bye,
name
everybody.
Is Sue Ann. So we know who you are.
This is Sue Ann.
Sue Ann. Okay, everybody. Sue Ann.
And now it's time for our closing sequence.
Right, so now you can go home and masturbate because Sue Ann has ordered for you.
I'm not
to
going
do
home.
So. Yeah.
I've given you permission to masturbate.
I think My joke with people like Sue Ann's is you're going to walk in and there's going to be vaginas pinned all over the wall. So, you know, people have,
and what's
people
the address?
Have all kind of conjured images.
Can you give me that address, please?
People have many conjured images of what it looks like. But, Sue Ann, why don't you talk about what you do? Cause
well, I do sex counseling and education. I think the most important thing that I do is I give people permission to be sexual, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially after cancer. You may feel like you're damaged goods or, you know, that you don't function the way you used to and that somehow you're not allowed to have pleasure in your life. And so it's a lot of permission giving around pleasure and sensation and sensuality that leads to sexuality.
And I think this is Sage. I think that's a lot of what happens in my office as well because I'm located in a practice that revolves just around cancer. A lot of times other issues come up as well that are typically impacted by either low sexual desire or some of the other pieces of being an intimate sexual being, and that can be something as simple as fatigue. So I think my role is really just normalizing, kind of like Sue Ann said, normalizing a lot of things and giving permission for people to be sexual beings and to have a desire to be a sexual being even in the midst of treatment or after. And my experience is if you go to a sex therapist, you know, that you're not just going to only talk about sex, but there are a lot of pieces of life and the sexual self that are just, you know, millions of steps beyond just the act of sex.
Well, that's helpful. Now folks know what they're in for. It's a little bit less scary. You're not going to see a bunch of vaginas pinned to the wall.
You might. No, you might, Carol.
You might. Okay.
And I actually have a vulva puppet that I like to use with my clients. So.
Oh,
yes.
My.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of vaginas.
Yes.
I have gotten a lot of comments on my blog. People have written in great questions that I'm going to ask you. But you know what? It's all about their coochies. And so
yeah.
I want some other questions tonight. And so a little incentive for folks in the chat room to put some questions up for us to ask our lovely guests. We have 3 copies of this incredible book called The Guide to Getting It On. Fantastic. It's like the Bible of everything you need to know about sex. It's a great book. I write about it in my book. It's really graphic and explicit, but not raunchy. It's a fantastic book. And
is it illustrated?
It is very much illustrated. Yes, indeed it is.
Is there a movie version of the book?
Not yet.
Okay.
No, but you could make one for them if you'd like.
Oh.
So we are going to give away 3 copies of that book to listeners in the chat room. Our first 3 best questions to ask that do not deal with the coochie. Okay? So that is a challenge to listeners to come up with some great questions, and we will have the Stupid Cancer Show send you a free copy of The Guide to Getting It On.
When I'm done with it.
Yeah. So with that, I want to first, before I dive into these questions that people have written to me, I want to talk a little bit about this doctor-patient relationship and talking to our doctors about sex. And I'm curious what you guys would say as an actual script. Like, what are the actual words that you would use or tell a cancer patient to use when they need to talk to their doctor about sexual issues? Because a lot of doctors don't bring this up. And it's on us to bring it up, and it's really uncomfortable and confusing, and we might not know what to say. So how do we have these conversations? What do we say?
I don't mind chiming in first. This is Sage. I think in my experience, you know, what we know, as you said, Carol, is that doctors aren't going to typically bring it up, or the healthcare professionals, and some of the research supports that, saying that a lot of them won't, but 85 to 90% of patients want their physicians to initiate it. Unfortunately, again, it's up to you. So typically what I recommend is be straightforward and ask questions ahead of time by either sending an email to the nurse if you feel more comfortable talking to the nurse, because you don't have to talk to the doctor to get the information you need. You can talk to anyone you're comfortable with. You can talk to the social worker that's on your team. But make a list of questions and either send it via email ahead of time so that the person you trust has time to kind of read it, and then it's not as awkward introducing the topic. You know, a lot of the young adults I work with have great senses of humor, and I say use that humor to chime in to questions about sex. Sometimes I'll just say, when you're sitting down with the nurse, just briefly and frankly say, so what's this going to do for my sex life? Make it into a joke and in somewhat of a lighter affair. If you're talking about body image and some of the other pieces of our sexual self, I think that really has to do more with sitting down with someone you trust to really have a conversation, not just getting information.
Yeah, this is Sue Ann. I would definitely agree with that. And we have to keep in mind that doctors aren't necessarily trained in human sexuality.
Yeah.
They're lucky if they get one elective that they might take about sexual functioning. So they're not necessarily, you know, comfortable talking about it anyway,
right?
Because they may not have the information that they need to answer your questions. And so I think, you know, practicing a few key phrases like, I have some sexual concerns that I'd like to talk about today. Or if you're being prescribed a new drug, you can simply ask, you know, well, what are the sexual side effects that go along with this? Because they should at least have that information and be able to direct you in the right direction. But, you know, as Sage said, it's not only the doctor that you're going to get this information from. Your nurse practitioner, your nurse, your social worker, these are fantastic resources and sometimes better than the doctor.
That's, you know, one of the questions that somebody wrote me with said, I found that our oncologists don't know squat about how cancer or chemo or radiation is going to treat our bodies, let alone our sexuality. Where can patients go to learn these things if their docs are not helpful? Now, if somebody has exhausted, I mean, you just gave a pretty long list of great places to go, nurse practitioner, doctor, social worker. If they're still not getting much of anywhere with those, any other places that you can suggest that people get these questions answered?
Again, this is Stan. I would say go to a sexologist.
And how does one find a sexologist? Where do people...
Yeah, there's some great professional organizations. One of them is ASECT. It's the American Association of Sex Educators, Counselors, and Therapists. And they have a website that has referrals to ASEC-certified sex therapist educators or counselors. I am certified through the American College of Sexologists. They have a website as well. So through a lot of the professional organizations, you can get a hold of information on well-qualified sexologists and or sex therapists.
And do you find, I'm sure this varies hugely from patient to patient and what their plan is, but do insurance plans ever cover sessions with you as they would with a therapist?
It varies on the insurance and how we as therapists bill it. Is that your experience, Sue Ann?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So it varies.
So that would be a question that somebody could ask when they're looking for a sexologist or sex therapist. Do you take this kind of insurance? Great.
Right.
Yeah. Cool. All right. So I'm going to start off with, you know, the list of coochie questions. Here we go. So somebody wrote me saying, I went through 6 weeks of radiation for rectal cancer. After that, I went through 6 cycles of chemo. I'm in menopause. Sex is extremely painful for me. Penetration is a nightmare. The only treatment suggested so far from my gynecologist is estrogen cream. This has not improved the pain that I have during intercourse. Is there anything else that can be done for me? I think the radiation has had a bad effect on my vagina. Please help. I'm happily married and would like to stay that way, and I feel so guilty that I don't enjoy sex anymore. Instead, I dread it.
So tough, and I'm sure Sue Ann has a lot of tips too. I think, you know, the first thing I would say to her is absolutely she's dead on that, yes, it's more than just estrogen that she needs because of where she was radiated, and there probably is some scar tissue And my guess is there's probably some narrowing of the vaginal canal or vaginal stenosis, which is causing some pain. So there are some techniques that can be used, and I would absolutely recommend this specific person talking to a sexologist, someone that can talk to her about some of these tips. But dilator therapy would be something I would probably explore with her. And, Suyan, I don't know if you feel comfortable describing that for them, because you're probably going to be better at it than I am.
Yeah, it's basically using a dildo-shaped object of varying sizes, and you're just going to have to practice relaxing the muscles of the vagina, breaking up the scar tissue, and slowly moving from one size up to a larger size, up to a larger size, as far as you're comfortable. You know, another option is working with a sexological body worker or any sort of pelvic physical therapist, especially if we're talking about scar tissue buildup. And if there's not enough elasticity in the vagina, that's going to make it really painful on penetration. So any sort of body work that's going to work on those muscles. And even your partner could do some vulva massage, some vaginal massage, similar to what women do before labor, you know, to sort of loosen everything up and in preparations for delivery. And you can use those same techniques in terms of cancer and having a tight vagina.
Yeah, all right, and the other tip, Carol, was, you know, that some of the gynecological oncologists are great resources for some of these young adult survivors who are having some physiological changes, whether in the vaginal area or because of a result of, like, radiation to the pelvic area anywhere, because they know a lot of pelvic floor therapists and some other people that are great resources to help with teaching them exercise and other other things that can help with figuring out what the problem is, because it may be scar tissue, it may be estrogen, it may be both, it may be that there's something else, that something is tilted. It could be several things given where she was radiated.
Talk a little bit more about sexological body worker and pelvic therapist. What do you do in sessions with these people? What is that? I'm not familiar with this kind of work.
Yeah, sexological body work is somewhat new. It's a hands-on sex therapy. It is not like working with a surrogate. It's not like working with a sex worker. It's someone who is trained typically as a sexologist, to use hands-on techniques for, you know, sensuality and exploring eroticism. So it's this sort of niche field at this point. So there might not be a sexological body work in your area, but there is certainly going to be a pelvic pain specialist who should have a nice thick Rolodex of pelvic physical therapists that they could send you to. And they're really schooled on, you know, just releasing that tension and releasing the muscles and any scar tissue that's built up.
Great. All right. New question to move on to. Got this one on my blog, and I can see that it's one popping up in the chat room, too, which is, this one woman wrote, I was told not to have sex because I could transmit the chemo to my husband. Is that true? Can you transmit chemo from...
I actually just commented on this. This is Sage on the little blog thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so your oncologist is correct in saying that there will be something given if you're in a heterosexual relationship and you have vaginal penetrative sex, that your husband will probably get some kind of, if the woman is the survivor, will get some kind of rash on his penis if you have sex within 48 hours of chemotherapy. Now, I want to preface that by saying it depends on the type of treatment you're getting. If you're getting pelvic radiation with cone therapy, which those of you who've had it know what I'm talking about, you probably are a little more radioactive than, and you don't want to be having sex with your partner for a little while. But as far as chemotherapy goes, you're not going to transmit chemo in that your partner's going to absorb it and suddenly start losing his hair in his pelvic area. That's not going to happen. What's going to happen is he's going to get a little rash. If you engage in oral sex, you may get a little irritation around the face. So I just recommend patients, number one, if you're on treatment, make sure your whites are good so that you don't have any bleeding problems, and you don't, you know, clearly you don't want to be at risk for infection. So if those are okay, have sex, just wear a condom or use dental dams.
You said heterosexual sex. What if you're having a same-sex partnership? Does this differ at all, or?
If you're talking about oral sex, use dental dams. And if you're talking about anal sex, same thing. Make sure your white counts are okay, so you don't bleed out, or your platelets are okay, and your white counts are okay, so you don't have infection risk. Again, it is fine, and you want to use a condom for anal sex, but otherwise fine.
All right.
And I would add to that, I think that we really need to encourage everyone to broaden our definition of what sex is.
Thank you.
does it have to involve a penis and a vagina?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it does. And I think that certainly at certain times during treatment, when you're tired, and you can hardly get out of bed, the thought of being active enough to have intercourse might just be beyond you. But you might be open to cuddling with your partner, to taking a bath
mm-hmm.
together, to receiving a massage maybe,
mm-hmm.
Or, having a big makeout session.
Sure,
mutual
masturbation.
All these other things.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There are all these other things that we can be doing, and I think it's really important to maintain some sexual interaction during treatment. That way you don't come out of treatment and, oh, my gosh, it's been a year since I've had sex, and now I have to try to get back into it. If you can do as much as you can throughout treatment and as much as appeals to you, then once you finish with treatment, I think you're going to be better off.
So that, I thought that was a really key word that you said, as much as appeals to you. And what happens when it's not really appealing to you? How much should somebody push themselves to become sexually active in whatever means? If, sometimes I think a lot of people going through treatment just don't want to have their bodies touched. How much do you push that? How much don't you? I think that is a big question for a lot of people.
Yeah, definitely. It's a situation where you're kind of playing the odds, but ultimately it's up to what feels good in your body. And there are times during treatment when it simply does not feel good to be in your body. And I know for me, right after I was diagnosed, sex was at the bottom of the list, and it is entirely appropriate to not want to be sexual. At any point in your life, whether you have cancer or not, we all go through phases where we're just not feeling sexy, and that's okay. So number one, I would say give yourself permission to not be sexual all the time. But again, if we're talking about sensual pleasures and if we're talking about a broad definition of what sex is, then there may be other things like maybe a massage of your hand that will allow you skin-to-skin contact with your partner. It's, a somewhat intimate activity, and it brings you some pleasure.
And I think even just laying naked with your partner is the most sexual and sensual thing you can do. I mean, just how many people do we go around? Now, Matthew, don't answer this question. How many people do we go around laying naked with? I mean, it's not a common occurrence. So,
are you only asking me that because my wife's in the chat room?
Or because I travel with him all the time?
Oh, no.
Yeah, so I think Sue Ann has it right that, again, broadening our definitions and expectations, and when you are feeling crummy, to trust yourself. And if you're not in a partnership, and if you don't mind, Carol, I just want to comment on those who aren't in a partnership. Maintaining your sexual self, as Sue Ann said, it's not just about the act of sex, and maybe that's a part of it, whether it's masturbation with yourself or watching romantic movies or just in any way enhancing your sensual and sexual self, but that's a really critical part of survivorship, whether you're in a partnership or not. So maintaining that and exploring that during and after treatment. Again, during treatment, a lot of people aren't interested in it. In fact, in the blog, a lot of people are saying, God, that was the last thing on my mind. I hear that a lot. But after treatment is when a lot of that stuff comes up. And when you are single or you're not in a partnership at the time of treatment or after, make sure that you're also just staying in touch with your body and listening to what your body needs and honoring that sensual and sexual part of yourself.
So I'm looking at one question from the chat room that says, how do you tell your partner not to touch you down there? Is there a way around it? And I'm wondering if part of that question maybe is, how do you have these conversations with your partner, and what do you actually say to them? Because it can be really challenging. Or even if it's not a partner, I'll be the anybody who's read my book knows that I certainly went through a lot of cancer without a partner, and it sure as hell did not stop me from having a lot of sex. So you can have sex with people who are not your partner, and how do you have these conversations with whoever it is that you have to find yourself in a moment with? How do you talk about this? You know, if you don't want to be touched, or if you want to be touched but in a particular way, how do you talk about that?
I guess I'll answer that. But I guess how do you talk about it? I, as you know, Carol, for me, I shoot straight. I think you just talk about it. You let them know. If we're in a sexual relationship, whether they're a partner or a one-night stand or a multiple stand, that we just need to tell them. There is probably some anxiety and fear on their part as well if they know your history. And so the only way we're going to work through that is by being honest and open. And you can use oral cues by verbalizing it, saying that feels good there, or how about here, and re-guiding or redirecting their hand to a place that does feel good, or their mouth to a place that feels good. You can also use sound cues. I mean, we all know what sounds cue us that feels good. You know, moaning and groaning usually indicate that feels good. So you can use those if you're not comfortable using words yet. But I would encourage anyone I worked with to really start using their words to start directing, because it is your body, and you need to be able to communicate what feels good and what doesn't, and find a space within yourself that you trust to communicate.
Are these all conversations that you have in the heat of the moment, or do you recommend people, you know, talking about this beforehand, or is that kind of like, you know, a joy killer? You know, what do you think?
I would not do that in the heat of the moment. as awkward as it may be to sit down and say, okay, we're going to talk about sex now, you know, really the best way to get what you want is to ask for it, and that requires some clear communication. And, you know, there's a certain amount of negotiation that goes on between two people who choose to be sexual together in terms of what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, and maybe what order they're going to do it in.
And how much.
So just and how much, and if they're going to do it, you know, over again. Yeah. Is it going to go for a week or, yeah. So, I mean, everyone's going to have this conversation. I think if we can just start out by having random or, you know, seemingly random conversations about sex just in our general lives. I mean, how often do you talk about sex? I do it every day, but that's my job, right? So I think that, you know, we're not really given a good vocabulary, you know, to use when we're having these conversations. So just to begin by talking about, oh, I don't know, how about, you know, the latest sex scandal in Hollywood or whatever it is that comes up. And that way you begin to use the words, you could begin to be more comfortable with it. And then when it comes time to talk about your own sexual desires and concerns, then you already are comfortable with the vocabulary, and it's going to make it a little bit easier for you to have that conversation.
Excellent. All right, so moving on, there are really great questions coming in here. And let's see. All right. Well,
can I ask a question?
Yeah.
A lot of the I'm guessing, and we can't tell because a lot of the people that are in the chat room tonight are logged in as guests, and we don't know their names. But do you find that, and maybe this just doesn't even need to be asked, but that more women are open to discussing sexual issues with regard to their cancer treatment than men are? Or do you feel that maybe because obviously the masculine factors and whatnot, testosterone and notwithstanding, or is it easier to talk to women about this?
I think that yes, women tend to come forward, but and maybe there's a masculine factor to that. But I see several men, and I think the reason we see more women talking about this is because it tends to affect more women in a more profound way. Men's recovery from treatment, when they're young men at least, is much greater than the longer-term impact of women in treatment. So men don't go, I don't want to say men don't, but very few men, young men, go through an early, quote-unquote, menopause for men. So their testosterone levels may drop during chemo, but they may resolve. And their issues are more typically around fertility and then some body image issues, which are just as profound, but they don't come out as much with that. I think when we're talking about kind of actual sex mechanics or the vagina, that it just is more women, more numbers of women on treatment have more problems, sexual problems, function problems, than men do. That's been my experience. I don't know about you, Sue-Ann.
No, I would agree with that. And I think, you know, there's also a gender dynamic that takes place between the patient and the doctor. So mm-hmm. I think what Matthew is sort of alluding to, you know, are guys, they're just not going to speak up about it and, you know, want to be macho. And I think that that may come up if they have a male doctor, or perhaps less so if they have a female doctor.
Mm-hmm. It comes up in our young adult group, and some of the young guys do chime in about it, but it seems that the prevalence, other than we talk about fertility and body image issues or disclosure, how do you disclose about being a survivor, that men tend to talk about that. It, again, I think some of the more profound issues that are long-term, long-lasting issues seem to be more female-oriented.
And so can we, just so we give the guys a little due diligence here, let's talk about some of those shorter-term issues that guys deal with. I mean, what about erectile dysfunction? How much of an issue is that with treatment, and is that something that you see very often when you're talking to people in your office, that this is an issue that they've had?
Do you want to comment first, Sue-Ann?
You know what? I'm going to throw that to you because I mainly work with women.
Okay. So I, in my experience, I would say any young man who has had anything affected, the pituitary gland affected, there clearly is some kind of sexual dysfunction that occurs. That number is pretty slim, but there is, and that's usually permanent. We work around it. We find other ways to work around it, but the sexual function issue is usually pretty significant. If they were younger, I know some of your listeners were diagnosed as children and are now young adult survivors. If you were younger and were prepubescent and had your pituitary gland affected, you may have some issues around the size of your penis or your testicles not fully developing. And some men have some more body image issues around that. It doesn't affect performance. You can have any size penis and perform just fine. But again, the body image issues, because of our lovely American society and what is sexual and what is not sexual, is portrayed very differently than I think what the average person looks like. So there are some short-term side effects. Some young men do have a lower testosterone from chemotherapy. It's not typically tested. We don't really look at men, unfortunately. We don't really look at their hormone levels. I'll tell you that the time I see it most, and when I usually ask young men to do it, is during transplant or post-transplant. That's typically when I've seen guys' testosterone levels drop. And it does rebound. It usually takes about 2 years for it to start rebounding, but it does rebound, and I've even seen sperm count rebound after 7 or 8 years. So it is short-term. But again, erectile dysfunction for men can be very distressing. So some of the techniques I talk about are more, again, as Sue-Ann said earlier, what other things can you do to be sexual and sensual? You don't need an erect penis to be a sexual person. So how else can you get in touch with your sexual side, and whether you're with a partner or not, what other things are sexually satisfying to you, whether it's, again, snuggling or cuddling or a heavy makeout session or laying naked together or watching a romantic movie together or laughing together, or the list goes on and on and on.
Yeah, I think the bottom line is, do you want to make your partner come, or do you want to make your partner come with your penis?
Thank you.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Great questions.
Hey now.
And here are more. All right, here's another question that we've got from the chat room. How do you know what is physical and what's emotional or psychological? So do you see the oncologist? Do you see a shrink? And this person said it's hard to drag one's partner to therapy if it turns out to be a physical problem. So how do you differentiate between what's a physical versus psychological problem?
Well, the problem is that it's usually a little bit of all of that. I see very few people who have only a physical problem or only an emotional or relationship problem. And sex is so dynamic that I know for a lot of the women that I work with, you know, if there are dirty dishes in the sink, they can't have sex because they're thinking about those dishes in the sink.
How?
Right? So that's not necessarily a physical thing, but, you know, are your needs being met? You know, we all have these conditions for great sex, And if the conditions are not met, then things aren't going to work out. But those conditions are pretty broad. They can include your emotional health, your relationship, your physical health, how much stress is in your life, how fatigued you are. All of these factors come into play when it comes to sex. So, you know, your doctor can help with the purely physical thing. Are your hormone levels okay? If not, is there something we can do about that? Do you have some sort of anatomical issue going on? But beyond that, you probably want to talk with someone else about it, a sexologist, sex therapist, social worker, someone like that, that's going to be able to get at all of those other factors that may be influencing your, for instance, lack of desire or lack of pleasure with sex.
Here's another question that I think sort of straddles those terrains of the physical impacting the emotional, and it's the question of how and when do you tell a guy you're dating that you can't have kids because of a hysterectomy?
I think disclosure is a hard thing, whether you can or can't have kids in general. And Sue-Ann, I don't know how comfortable you are disclosing about yourself as a survivor and what you've experienced. I'm not, so I can only talk about what my experience has been. So I'd rather default to you initially, and then I'll chime in with what my experience has been.
Sure. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways that you can approach it. And I think that let's give the scenario that you are telling a new partner, so you're disclosing for the first time to someone. The energy that you bring into it is very, very important. So if you come into that conversation feeling self-conscious, feeling like you're damaged goods, like you're not really good enough, that, you know, this horrible thing happened to you, and then you tell someone, oh, yeah, I had cancer, well, you know, that energy gets picked up, and then, you know, the other person is just going to react off of that energy. Whereas if, you know, it's like the whole stupid cancer movement. If you go into it, you know, yeah, I had stupid cancer and whatever, and now I can't have kids and blah, 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 it's a different energy, and so it gets read differently. But everyone has to make their own decisions about when is the right time to disclose. And personally, I just feel it out by the situation. I'm single, I'm doing some online dating, and you know, I know some women who have, you know, that they're a survivor, it's on their profile, or they disclose within the first few emails, or with the first phone call, or at the first coffee date, or, you know, I haven't felt the need, the need to disclose very early on. Not that I'm afraid it's going to scare them away, but I want to be seen for all of what I am, and a cancer survivor is only part of what I am, and so I would hate to be judged solely on that one aspect of my history. So, you know, I think really just taking, again, a broad approach with it and saying, you know, this is part of me, but, you know, I'm all these other things as well.
Yeah, and that's typically what I recommend. Sue-Ann nailed it. You know, to remember that cancer is just a part of your history. How many of us go on our first date and dump all of our, you know, long list of emotional and traumatic baggage that we have from previous relationships on the first date? Unless you don't want to have a second, we don't do that on our first date. So, you know, you get to know the person, you let them get to know you, and when you feel it's right, you disclose. I think the biggest thing for me, the way I tick, being kind of a type A woman, education and empowerment is huge for me. So before you disclose, make sure you understand everything. Don't disclose something that you don't know about. So if you're going to disclose that you've had a hysterectomy and therefore you can't have children, well then if you want to have children and that's important to you, know what your options are so that you can present it with, I may not be able to birth children, but I can have children and here are my options. Because, again, the more informed and educated and optimistic and knowledgeable you are about not only disease but what it means for the rest of your life, the more comfortable they're going to be with that information.
Great. I'm going to keep on cranking away with these questions because time is getting short, and I just want to get a bunch of them in. This is more of a sort of a broad question. My boyfriend was just diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma and just started chemo, and I want to know what I should expect as far as behavior sexually from him.
If we had a
really
script, we would have published it.
It's a tough question to answer because everyone is so different.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
I mean, you just have to create space for the person. I mean, he needs to take the lead, I would say.
Yeah.
And he's got to just trust in his body to tell him what's okay and what's not.
And I would, I mean, because My guess is, given his treatments, he's probably going to... Did you say it was non-Hodgkin's or Hodgkin's?
Hodgkin's.
Okay. So, you know, radiation may be involved, high-dose chemotherapy. Again, I don't know if transplant is in his future or is now, but the treatment may dictate some of that, too. Some of the basics that I say as an oncology counselor is, you know, make sure when his white count or when his platelets are really low, just be smart. Find other ways to find sensual and sexual touch. And my guess is when that's low, he's not going to be wanting to have the kind of sex that you might have had before, so you need to find other ways to be intimate, but let him direct that. And I would be very open and honest with the oncology care team if you feel comfortable with that as his partner. Ask questions. What does this mean? How can I be careful? How can I be supportive? And I think the best thing you can do to be supportive is communicate with him and support him, ask questions, see what you can do to help him feel more comfortable because, again, there's a lot more changes going on other than sex. The hair loss, if he will be on steroids, so that's going to have some mood changes as well as some other impacts. So I would ask questions of the healthcare providers, be prepared and be educated.
Hey,
go ahead.
Is Jack. I have a question because you had touched on early in the segment that doctors don't really get trained in the nitty-gritty of how this all works. Is that something that you foresee changing in the oncology world as these doctors are, you know, going through medical school and, you know, as part of the young adult movement that we have to train these doctors, that these are some serious conversations that you need to have with your patients?
Well, the IOM report, the Institute of Medicine report that came out recently, that's mm-hmm. starting to shift and change. You know, Julie, who is supposed to be on this talk with us, is at a meeting, I think as a result of some of the IOM standards. So I do think some of the changes are going to happen, but to say just oncologists are going to be trained, I think there are some options in fellowships if we as social workers or nurses can start taking the lead in educating our physicians and the fellows coming in about the sexual health. That's part of my life goal, and I think Sue Ann's doing that as well. But I don't know, in my experience, if that means it's going to totally change the medical, general medicine to change people's training in that. I don't know, Sue Ann, what do you think?
I don't see a change happening in the medical school curriculum.
Yeah.
I teach first and second year students how to do breast and pelvic exams, and at one osteopathic college we do teach a sexual medicine course, but you know, there's so much that these doctors have to learn. And there's new things popping up every day, and they still have to cram it into 4 years. So carving out more space for sexual medicine I don't see as very likely. And I think really the future, like you said, Sage, is in the nurses and the social workers sort of training the doctors, doing fellowships and things like that. And, you know, if we can get, you know, the doctor to even have a sexual question on the intake form,
right.
I think that's a huge step in the right direction because that begins to open up the conversation.
Yeah.
So folks have wanted to know what resources are available to help people know about sexual issues after cancer, what books, what websites. They said, you know, a lot of regular cancer books don't talk about sex at all. And so, I mean, I hate to self-plug my book here, but...
I was just going to say, Carol.
Everythingchangesbook.com, also available on Amazon.
I was going to say, plug away.
Carol,
yeah,
you're a book?
In my book, Everything Changes, The Insider's Guide to Cancer in Your 20s and 30s, I was really hell-bent on having these conversations. Sage is in my book. I had a fantastic, amazing interview with her and with many patients around the country who are talking about sex and sexual issues, and it was very liberating for me to sit down with complete strangers in their living rooms and talk to them about their sex lives, because this, I found, was often not happening in a very candid way in a lot of the support groups that I went to, but that it could happen more in a one-on-one kind of situation. So Everything Changes, you know, it's in, you know, bookstores and online. It is not a very technical book. If somebody is looking more for the technical side of things, we did have a question from somebody who said, are there resources to learn how to deal with sexual side effects of a mastectomy and hysterectomy? And I do actually have a lot of these resources listed in my book, but maybe you guys want to toss some of those out for listeners to hear about where they can go to learn more about these side effects.
I have a quick question, if I could jump in real quick.
And maybe this is just part of. Clearly we're running over, which is great. We can go a little further, and obviously there's a need to do this show probably on a quarterly basis because of the traction it's getting at this point. But my question is, how much can we truly expect of doctors? Because there's so much being piled on what everyone thinks they need to do versus is it realistic to think that adding this on, that you need to be able to talk to your patients about sex, or is it would it make more sense to have or sort of to enhance what we already have, which is access to social workers and patient navigators and oncology nurses and therapists who would specialize in that.
Right. I think that's where it's headed, and I hope that's where the field of oncology changes, because I don't think it's realistic to expect our doctors to learn one more thing. And quite honestly, they went into medicine for a reason that may not guide them to wanting to have these kinds of conversations, where the nurses and social workers may be more comfortable just in general. Because I'm a little biased since I'm a social worker, I think we really are the best people in the healthcare field to be addressing this topic. I think all social workers should be trained, at least on all oncology social workers. I think in order to get OSWC certified, which is oncology social work certified, you need to take classes in some of the sex therapy, at least in the arena of understanding the impact on the sexual self, et cetera. So I do think that it probably should go elsewhere. I don't know whether that's going to change. I think that will take some of the young adult movement as well as others being willing to ask the questions of the other providers, because right now we still are in a fairly, excuse my frankness, but in a paternalistic kind of system where the doctor says and we do. And so we do have to at least open up and see that there are other healthcare professionals that may be able to offer more in the area of psychosocial sexual support other than our physicians. And they do great at treating our body and treating the cancer, but we can't expect them to do more than that.
And as far as resources for people educating themselves, you know, there's a new book that recently came out, and I can't remember the name of it. Maybe you ladies could know what I'm talking about. It's a book for women, and it's about women, sex, and cancer, and I feel like that might
be... Yes, Women, Sex, and Cancer. That's what it's called.
Women,
it's,
Sex, and Cancer. Okay.
It's by Ann Katz, and Ann is a nurse in Canada who has done a ton of research on sex and cancer. She's also written some books for healthcare providers called Breaking the Silence. She's fantastic. She's a great resource. Definitely... I think it's written for a little bit of the older viewer or older age. I don't want to say viewer, but we're not on TV, you know. But the older
reader.
Person. But I still think it's applicable. And I think Sally Foley's book, Sex Matters for Women, for me is a great book. I think, again, Carol, I love your book. It's got a great resource, and it normalizes it. I don't know how much technical information people need, and once they need technical information, then they shouldn't be going to a book. They should be going to an expert, go to someone like Sue Ann, talk to someone who can give them information and give them real tips and do a full physical assessment as well. So I know when I'm working with people, I also typically get a consent form to speak with the gynecologist or someone who's referring them so I can get a better understanding of what's going on physiologically. So I would also say that is a good resource. Go to some of your gynecologists. Step outside of the oncology world and go to some of your gynecologists and ask what they would recommend. I also want to comment, sorry, really quick on men, because there is a lot of this chatter is about women, and I just want to again say there is some resources out there for men, and there's not a lot of books written because the attention goes to young women because so many of the things affect early menopause and then about breasts and gynecological cancers, and it's like the sex organs get attention around the topic of sex, but most of the young adults are getting, you know, the hematological diseases or the sarcomas, and they don't get a lot of the attention around the sex talk other than fertility. And so I just want to shout that out, that I think we need to do better in our assessments in the healthcare field beyond just people get diagnosed with a cancer of what we would call a sex organ, and really pay attention to all diseases, not just breast, cervical, ovarian, and testicular.
I think that's such a great point. I interviewed a lymphoma patient in my book who was is a guy, and he was talking about how, like, what it's like when he doesn't feel very hot or feel very sexy. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that, you know, men have body image issues too. And
that's right.
Yeah. So two really important things I want to take care of before we run out of time. Jack, we need the names or the, you know, IDs of three people, the first three people in the chat room who gave us great questions. And what they are going to need to do, I think, is send an email to...
Yes, that's correct.
Send an email to I2Y with their name and address so that we can send you the guide to getting it on.
That's correct. And the three people that we've chosen with the phenomenal questions are Rob723, Lisa74.
I was waiting for the drum roll.
You cue the drum roll. You're waiting for something that you're supposed to cue?
Yes.
Well, with the
don't
last
tell me how
one,
to read the news,
the drum
I won't
roll.
Tell you.
All right. Say
okay.
The first two again, and I'll do the drum roll.
Okay. First winner of a book is Rob723, and the second winner is Lisa74, and the third is Guest4411.
Dude, he was waiting for the drum roll for number three.
We need to have a conversation about relationships next, and I think the two of you are going to be the ones that we're talking about.
I'm playing it anyway.
The bickering couple. So if Jack just read your name, send an email to
jack@i2y.com.
jack@i2y.com with your name and your snail mail address, and you will be getting this fantastic book in the mail. And thanks to Paul, the author of The Guide to Getting It On, for
it is a great book.
It's a great, great book. So The Guide to Getting On, it's available on Amazon, it's in Barnes & Noble, it's in Borders, there's a link to it on my website, everythingchangesbook.com, and Sage, we want to talk about your new website and where people can find out about how to participate in your survey.
Yeah, please, shameless plug here, people. I really want to graduate. So if you could help me, that would be great. I am doing, as you know, Matthew said, my dissertation is looking at the sexual self of young adult cancer survivors as compared to their healthy peers. So you can find out more about this and the connection to the survey at sexualselfandcancer.com. And I need a minimum of 150 survivors to respond. And then if you could refer out to some of your healthy peers, and how we're defining that is really just that they haven't had cancer. They may have a bazillion other kinds of diseases, but just not cancer. And my goal is, again, once we get this information, I hope that we can show that we need to be really addressing this at the forefront of diagnosis and not 2 years later when some of the side effects are evolving. And I hope that some of this information will lead to further research that we can actually change the way medicine is done.
So this is really important. This is important, one, because Sage needs to graduate, and it's important,
right,
two, because it will affect you and those who come after you. And so I know a lot of you have blogs out there, and you can link to Sage's blog on your blog. Write a blog post about this, you know, study and the survey that she's doing so that you can get the word out there to the cancer community. It's really important.
Thank you. Yeah, and once the study is published, I will use that website then to just dialogue and blog about some of the sexual issues that young adults are facing. So that'll be stay tuned. That'll come.
Fantastic. Well, thank you guys so much for being here tonight and for having this really important conversation with us. It was really excellent.
Yeah, definitely setting the stage for this is clearly a topic people want to talk about in a comfort zone like this.
Yeah, Matthew, we need to have
this.
It on. Come on.
We'll get it done. We'll definitely have you back on next fall for sure. Absolutely.
Great.
Thanks. All right, so Sue Ann Mark and Sage Bolte, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Kick ass. Thank you so much, and take care of yourselves.
Thank you. You too.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks a lot.
All righty. So that's our show. That was a great show, guys.
It was.
I mean, it's one of those things where I don't mind going over because the content is just so compelling. And we had like 45 people in the chat room. That's like amazing for tonight.
Yeah, a lot of good questions, too.
A lot of good questions. And a lot of, you know, we can only imagine how many more questions people can ask. Like, it's like... It's almost like they've never had a place where they could ask these questions comfortably, and we can provide that, which is really extraordinary.
Yeah, and I'm gonna go back to some of my friends that are in med school and just get a feel for what type of classes they're taking, because I know that they have like bedside manner classes and how to deal with lawyers and lawsuits and stuff. So I'm just gonna inquire to see, you know, if stuff like this comes up in the med school these days with the next generation of doctors.
And I also want to encourage people. I just put my my blog up in the chat room. If you have more questions, post them on my blog. Send them to me as comments, and we will get Sage and Sue Ann responding to them on my blog, so we can, you know, take this into the blog realm. The conversation doesn't have to end here, and we're going to be excited to have them back again. So.
All righty. Well, I guess I will see you guys here next week.
Next week.
Excellent.
All right.
You don't happen to have It's Raining Men in your repertoire, do you?
No, I'm sorry. I don't have it handy.
It's Raining Men.
All righty, Carol. You take care of yourself and have a good week.
You too, Matt.
Good night, Carol. Good show.
All righty. And now it's time for our... Now it's actually time for our closing sequence.
Prepare to activate.
I hear there's rumors on the internets.
You ever seen a grown man naked?
And so... to all of you, a fond farewell.
Hooray, I'm helping.
You are a meathead.
Oh, Magoo, you've done it again.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
All right, folks, that's tonight's show. I hope you had as much fun as I did getting stimulated while we poked a stick of stupid cancer.
Diggity.
I'd like to thank our guests.
Sorry, Fauci.
Jason Zimmerman, Dr. Sue Ann Mark, Sage Bolte. Next week, our show is called Delayed Diagnosis Sucks, with our Survivor Spotlight, Astrid DeCastri, Glenn Rockowitz, a writer, comedian, filmmaker, author of Rodeo and Juliet, and returning champion Dr. Brandon Hayes Latin, young adult testicular cancer survivor, oncologist to the stars, and the keynote at the OMG Cancer Summit in New York City. Sure to be a hell of a show. Same bad time, same bad channel. But folks, remember, if you've missed any of our previous shows, you can listen to the archives at stupidcancershow.com or subscribe to our podcast on iTunes at itunes.ituy.com. Remember, if it's not stupid, it's not cancer. We'll see you back here all next week live from the chemo deck. Jack Buford, Carol Rosenthal, Captain Stubing, and our live audience and I wish you all a pleasant evening. Go to bed, Leah.
Fucker out.